Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Here's the podcast for Connecting Faith. Enjoy the conversation.
Real conversations about how we live out our faith every day. Welcome to Connecting Faith.
Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Great to have you tuned in. Ted Ross of Controls.
Hello.
And Ted, if you are asked to reflect on one area or aspect of your parenting that you'd like a do-over on, what would it be?
Just one?
Just one, yeah. So, well, I'm looking for the do-over button here in the studio. I'm not finding it. But anyway,
That'd be nice, wouldn't it? Yeah. There are times. I think back to something that another guest at one point said about you should never shout in your house. There's never really a reason to shout. Thought about that, and I'm like, yeah, I can get on board with that, but have I shouted since?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I have, you know. It's hard.
Yeah, never shout. There's an apparent marriage advice thing. Never shout at your spouse unless the house is on fire. I think that was good. All right. So no shouting. That would be your do-over?
I'd like to try, yeah.
Okay. I think for me, it would probably be, majoring on the minors. I don't know. Spent too much time on things that ultimately didn't matter that much. It's like, I look back at really. And I traveled a fair amount doing some contract work when the kids were small. I don't think that helped me particularly personally or probably certainly as a parent. But today we're talking parental do-overs.
All
it's going to be great.
Very good.
Looking forward to that. But hey, before we do that, just want to remind you that if you want to attend our first annual Writers Conference this summer, you're going to want to enter the Writers Contest, which is going on now. And you could possibly win a free registration to that conference, which will include a chance to get a one-on-one with an acquisition editor.
So, great opportunity. July 15th. Circle the date on your calendar now and make plans to attend here in St. Paul, Minnesota.
Yeah. And then the Writers Contest going on through the 20th of March. So you go online. You can submit your writing online, and you can also vote for your favorite.
So I already have some great entries in, so check it out.
Check it out, myfaithradio.com. Well, speaking of great writing, our guest today does great writing and a great speaker as well. We're honored to have him with us back again. Jonathan McKee, author of over 20 books, including the latest, If I Had a Parenting Do-Over, Seven Vital Changes I'd Make. He's also written 52 Ways to Connect with Your Smartphone-Obsessed Kid, and the bestseller, The Guy's Guide to God, and Girls and the Phone in Your Pocket, some of those good things. So we're looking forward to a great conversation today. Has 20-plus years in youth ministry experience, and he speaks to parents and leaders worldwide. And by the way, you can follow him on his blog or check out the website, thesource4parents.com, the source number 4parents.com. Jonathan McKee, welcome back to Connecting Faith.
Oh, man, thanks for having me. So glad to be here.
So a parenting do-over. Now, I guess just to make sure we understand, you know what you're talking about. You do have children. Do you still have some in the house, or are they all out?
No, I am officially an empty nester.
Okay.
My kids are 19, 21, and 23, so they're in college. They're out on their own. But they're boomerang kids, though. They go out and then they come back for the summer or come back when they need money or you know how it is.
Sure. Well, we're talking kind of hindsight today, and I think probably all of us have, regrets. Here's where I messed up, or, man, if I could do it differently next time. In putting this book together and, of course, a lot of your speaking, you've asked that question. What's the most common answer to that do-over question when you talk to parents?
Yeah, it's funny because whenever you notice in any settings where you see someone talking and they say, you know what, if I could do this over again, if I could go back in time and change one parenting practice, here's what I would do. Whenever that's said, like if you're ever in watching a panel of parents sharing about their experience, whatever, man, people are always so eager to hear that answer, and I noticed that. So we pulled a bunch of parents, and we started asking that question over and over again in different venues and in different articles we wrote, and I said, please, send me your response. Answer, if you could go back in time and change one parenting practice, what would you do over? And the answers were eye-opening. We couldn't believe it because, obviously, hundreds of answers, and over again, the one answer we kept hearing just again and again was, I wish I'd spent more time with my kids. And the answer came in many forms. We heard more time in conversation and less time in front of the TV, or I wish I would have gone put my kids to bed more. Even when they're in high school and they were just like, Mom, I'm going to bed, I'm fine, I don't need you to kiss me goodnight. I wish I would have gone in there and insisted and just literally, you know, kissed them goodnight. I wish we would have had more family dinners. I remember one mom said, with a do-over, I'd jump in the ocean with them more instead of sitting on the sand and watching them play. It's like parents have this overwhelming feeling of, man, I wish when it comes to either bonding or boundaries, your boundaries are good, but I wish I would have had more bonding time. That was the answer we heard over and over again.
And was that the same for you as you look back? I mean, you know, this book has a lot of you in it, you and your wife and
yeah.
your family experience.
You know, it's funny how many times we look back and say, you know, obviously, because, I mean, bonding and boundaries are both so important. You know, bonding's hanging out with your kid, rolling on the floor with your kids. And I think of all those good times we did. And boundaries, same thing, very important. You know, it's good to have boundaries. And there's times to say, no, you're not going to have your phones in your bedroom at night, or you're not going to do this. The thing that's interesting about those two elements that are both so important is that sometimes, I think I see this a lot in the church especially, and I know in my home, I kind of had this thought that, you know, I want to raise my kids right. I want to build values into them. So we need to have these boundaries to govern them and to help show them the way. And what I didn't realize and what I started to hear over and over again from other parents is sometimes if you become so focused on boundaries, we don't even realize, but we become unfocused on bonding. And an example might be, and parents can ask themselves this question, when you walk in the room and you see your kids after school, is the first thing out of your mouth, so did you finish your chores? You know, how much homework do you got? Okay, how much game time have you spent already? Have you hit your hour on game time? I mean, because sometimes that's what we do. We end up being like kind of a parole officer, you know, and we kind of end up being this person checking up on our kids. And what happens is sometimes we don't even realize that we're spending so much focus on boundaries that it can interfere with bonding. And the scary part is sometimes we forget that lots of the, you know, think about this. Values are very often passed on through conversations, not through our rules. And so what happens is sometimes if all we are is that boundary parent, when mom or dad doesn't have a relationship with their kids tend to glean values and behaviors from other sources, and that's frightening.
I wrote it as the first change, the do-over you do, less interrogation, more conversation, and I could certainly relate to that. I'm sure every parent is nodding their head. You talk about, in that framework, the power of saying yes. Say a little bit more about that.
Well, that was something I think I realized a little too late, and that was that, you know, we're all busy. I mean, I hear it from parents all the time. They're saying, Jonathan, this stuff sounds, you know, I'll teach a parenting workshop, and they'll say, this sounds great in theory, but, you know, I have a job, I have a life. And the fact is sometimes our kids come up and they're like, hey, you know, can you help me with this? And it might not be a fun request. It might not be like, Dad, can we go play ball in the backyard, you know? It could be, Dad, I got to go to DMV. Will you go with me? You know, and these are the moments where sometimes like, hey, you know what? No, I got a to-do list up to the ceiling. And I made a pledge with my last kid, because as I saw my other two kids leaving the house and I looked back in hindsight and thought, I would give anything to have some of these moments over again. And I would clear anything off my desk to just have some more time with them, because time went so fast. I made a pledge that any time my youngest, my daughter Ashley, that she came up to me and said, hey, Dad, can we go here? It didn't matter what the request was. If I didn't have to break my word with someone else, it didn't matter if I had a to-do list stacked to the ceiling and I was going to be up till 2 in the morning. If my daughter came up to me and said, Dad, can we go to lunch? The answer would be yes. I call it the yes factor. And no matter what, and I remember, I can give you countless examples of times where I thought, I do not have time at all to do this. And I said yes, and I looked back and I thought, that was amazing. And I didn't care that I had to stay up super late, because that connection time was so important. And that's something I encourage parents and other parents who've been through it are like, absolutely. I've never met anybody on their deathbed who's looking back going, I wish it would have worked more.
Yeah, no question. Speaking of last kid, is there a last kid syndrome where, you know, the older kids go, well, hey, we never got away with that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, what house doesn't have that, right? You know, how come Ashley gets to do that? We didn't get to do that. And that's, and think about it. We do some course correction on the way. That's the cool thing about, you know, I mean, it's by God's grace, right? I mean, that's the way it works, is forget about your past. Let's look at the future. And it's just kind of like GPS. Sometimes you've gone down the wrong path, but it recalculating, you know, the comforting words, recalculating. And sometimes we do that, and we do some course correction as a parent. And that's a lot of what we talk about in this book, If I Had a Parenting Do-Over, is, you know, it's not too late. I don't care if a kid's 17 and you got 6 months before they go off to college, or man, I tell you, some even empty nester parents are saying, you know, what do I do? Well, I'm there. I know what that's like. And, you know, a 23-year-old I've got, that there's times where I'm sitting there going, man, I need to focus more on bonding. I don't have boundaries anymore. He's out on his own. Bonding is what's important. It's not too late to focus on that relationship, because that's where so many values are passed on.
Jonathan McKee is an author and youth culture expert, and has written a wonderful new book called If I Had a Parenting Do-Over, 7 Vital Changes I'd Make. We've gone through that first one. We're talking about less interrogation, more conversation. There's a bunch more to get to, and we're going to talk about those course corrections. The good news is that this is about course corrections today, so need not just be hanging around with regrets, but maybe there's some things that we can do and tip the scales for the benefit of our kids and strengthen our parenting. We've got some copies of Jonathan's book to give away. I'd love to make sure you get one and sign up for that. We'll do a drawing at the top of the hour. It's 877-93-FAITH. It's 877-933-2484, 877-93-FAITH. You may have a question for Jonathan McKee as well. You're welcome to join us. You can always find out more about Jonathan on one of his websites, thesourceforparents.com. That's the number 4, sourceforparents.com. Jonathan McKee, an author of over 20 books, including If I Had a Parenting Do-Over. And we're talking more in just a moment. We admit that there are times when, you know, love is probably pretty far down on the list of things that are crowding our minds. Got a lot of stuff going on, and you're trying to manage on the fly. And, you know, our kids have their own ideas and behaviors. And so you need to kind of pick the battles. In fact, that's our next do-over we're going to talk about. You know, if you love the movie Frozen, or if you don't, you know the theme song, Let It Go, Let It Go. That's the title of Jonathan McKee's chapter from his book, If I Had a Parenting Do-Over, 7 Vital Changes I'd Make. Jonathan's a youth culture expert and author, some 20 books, and this latest has some great advice for us about, you know, how we can have a do-over. Let's let it go. Talk about number 2, picking your battles, Jonathan.
Oh man, that's one of those things that, you know, I immediately, as I was looking through and looking at these 7 vital changes I'd make, this one was right near the top, because there were so many times where there was battles fought in my house where, you know, I like so many other parents, I think looked back 5 minutes later, 10 minutes later, and went, oh man, you know, did I really need to say that? Was I too harsh? You know, and starting to second guess, because it's like, why did I even go down that road? And it's funny, because in the moment, you don't see it. You know, you see, you tell your kid to brush their teeth and they don't, and you go in and, you know, you feel the toothbrush and it's dry and you're like, wait, you know, you lied to me. This is lying. And if I don't teach my kid about integrity right now, if I don't sit down and lecture them for an hour about how, you know, someday they will be fired if they continue to lie like this, you know, and so that's what we see at the moment. And sometimes, you know, it's like, an hour later, you're looking back at the reaction you had or all this, and you're sitting there going, this is brushing teeth. And yes, it's important. You don't want your kid to, you know, get in the habit of lying, but we need to learn to sometimes, if you know, pick our battles and for sure monitor our reaction and how we talk to our kid, because sometimes the way we respond is worse. The original infraction, so to speak, you know, and you know, we make it worse than something that was just brushing teeth. And I know I'm not alone. My friend Gary, I remember, came up to me and said, Jonathan, my daughter We tell her every time she finishes taking a shower, she throws her towel on the corner of her room while she's getting ready. And we say, don't forget to put that towel away. And the next day, another towel will be there. And she goes, he says, if I don't say anything, 12 days later, there will be 12 towels in a pile, and it doesn't matter. We're like, put those towels away. And he's like, what do I do? Because I have to teach a responsibility. And I just, related to him so much because it was things like that, that sometimes I was like, I need to teach them responsibility in this moment. And it's funny now looking back, myself and countless others who kind of looking back, it's like, well, is your daughter doing her homework? Is she making good choices? Does she love God? Is she smoking pot in the living room? If you get the answers to these different questions and you find out, she's a 4.0 student. She's actually doing really good. Well, then hand her a box of Tide and say, guess what? It's time for you to do your own laundry because apparently you don't know how to put towels away. And then let it go. Walk away. And sometimes we need to learn how to do that, especially in the moment. That's one of the things I try to do in the book is give kind of a map of how do you spot these things as they happen and how can we avoid, jumping into these skirmishes that you look back and go, why did I even go down that road?
Well, that is kind of one of the challenges, isn't it? It's the in the moment, because there's always a question that we weren't really prepared for. I mean, as much as we can study your book, but there's always going to be something, I hadn't really thought about that, or that was a wrinkle I didn't think about. So how do we handle those in-the-moment times?
Well, I give several steps on what to do, and the first one being spot it and learning, because so often, I know with myself, sometimes pride would kick in, and I'd be upset, and something would happen, and I would kind of tell myself, I got this. I got this. I can still proceed and handle this. And you know what? I whenever I say I got this, I never had it. I never did. And it was one of those moments where when I spot those moments, I needed to literally, I made it a matter of prayer. I said, God, set off an alarm in my head when these moments happen. And the second step I say is press pause. And as a matter of fact, that was such an important step that I devote a whole chapter to it later, talking about how to just stop. And because I didn't make good decisions on the fly. And being able to say, okay, I'll tell you what, here's what I need you to do. I need you to put your phone down on the table. I need you to go to your room and do your homework, and we're going to talk later. And I found that the Clint Eastwood voice kind of actually helped a little bit too. But if you just, whatever it takes, press pause, get them, because how many times do we look back later and go, after 15 minutes, half an hour, a day, whatever, we look back and go, what I should have said was, they always say hindsight's 20/20, right? Well, the funny thing is we can have that as foresight when we press pause, because very often it takes just a few minutes to think through and go, okay, here's what I need to say, here's what I need to not say. And so I talk about some of those things, spotting it, pressing pause, stepping into their shoes. And these are all steps of letting it go, giving a roadmap. And again, these are things that I learned, sadly, through the school of hard knocks, through failing miserably time after time.
Yeah, and we're all nodding. Yeah, we're there with you, Jonathan. One of the we're talking seven vital changes I'd make if I had a parenting do-over. Number three, I wrote up as, noticing your child. How do you become a student of your child? Why is that an important part of the do-over?
Well, sometimes we, especially in this world right now where there's, technology's crazy. Everything's changing so fast. I mean, it wasn't even until 2012 that the majority of Americans had a smartphone in their pocket. And things have changed so fast that now we have over 80-something percent. And I say 80-something because, surveys vary a little bit, but pretty much most people are thinking between 83 and 86% of 12 through 17-year-olds now have a smartphone in their pocket. If you work with young people as like a youth worker, you'd say, no, pretty much every one of them do. And this is changing the way they think. It's changing the way they act. It's changing the way they communicate. And so lots of times we as parents, the way we react, or I should say overreact to, oh my gosh, we've got to, put a pen in this. We've got to stop this. We've got to, and so we overreact by boundaries. We immediately put more boundaries up. And sometimes what happens is we think, okay, if I get the appropriate, parent, software where you can spy on your kid, and literally parents are like, okay, my kid's in Walmart right now. aisle 7 and they're walking by the candy section, you know, uh-oh, you know, did I authorize them to get that candy? You know, and sometimes we think if we have all that stuff, and I'm not, again, I'm not knocking boundaries, but if we're relying on that and that's all there is, sometimes we neglect bonding to the point where we don't even take time to actually notice our kid. I have so many parents where when we start talking about music, they're like, I don't know what music my kids listen to. When we talk about apps, they're like, well, I don't really actually know what apps they have. And sometimes even if they're monitoring them through all the software or whatever stuff, I'm like, when's the last time you've just sat down and talked with your kid? And a lot of parents, that's really hard for them. And especially because we're trying to connect with a bunch of young people who have a hard time, frankly, looking up from their devices and having a face-to-face conversation. But so that chapter, noticing, is talking about what is it look like to actually just notice our kids. And I'll give you a good example of what this can look like. Most parents can relate to taking a bunch of kids home from soccer practice or from, you know, play practice or whatever. Most parents have had a time where they've got their kid and other kids in a car. If you've had that experience, that's one of those times where I encourage parents, hey, put on your German Shepherd ears and just listen and notice. You can learn so much about your kid when you're just driving them home, because as most parents know, they forget you're up there and their friends will just be talking, and a car full of teenagers, you know, or tweens, they'll be talking about, I mean, name it, who they like, who they don't like, who made them mad, what apps they downloaded. If you got middle school boys in the car, they'll be talking about something stupid, like, you know, like, no, I'll tell you who's got the best fries. I'll tell you who's got the best French fries. No, who's got the best French fries? I mean, you know, the stupidest things. But you can learn so much about them. And the funny thing is, when you tune in like that as a parent, parents that will say, I have a trouble connecting with my middle school boy, I'm like, well, did you hear what his favorite fries were? Well, walk in the room. And if you live in Texas and he was arguing that Whataburger was the best fries, walk in and be like, hey, you want to go grab some Whataburger fries right now? Do you feel like, you know, do you feel like grease overload right now? Let's go for it. You know, because you noticed what they liked. And sometimes when we're sitting there listening like that, we'll even hear them say something. Matter of fact, you'll hear their friend say something, and then you'll hear your kid go, shh, 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 shh. And that's when you really need to have your German Shepherd ears up and listen. We can learn so much about our kids, and that's what that chapter is about, is how do we notice what's going on in their world? How do we notice, not just through spyware, but by communicating with them about apps and about what they're listening to and their friends and having these conversations? It's vital for us as parents to notice.
Yeah, we're talking about bonding. There's a good bonding agent called duct tape, which I know you recommend, that we maybe just put it over our mouth and just practice listening for a while. You have an opportunity to listen for a few more minutes as we spend some time with Jonathan McKee today. We're talking, if I had a parenting do-over, 7 vital changes I'd make. And we talked about, you know, less interrogation, more conversation, about picking your battles. And, you know, maybe we've already touched on your do-over and you're feeling good about it, or if not, stick around, because we're going to get to you and to review it in a moment. We do have some copies of Jonathan's book to give away. Love to have you sign up for that. Great resource. You'll love it. 877-933-2484. 877-93-FAITH. You may have a question as well. You're welcome to join us. Jonathan McKee is a best-selling author, and they're talking about parenting do-overs today. The phone line, again, is open at 877-933-2484. Talking parenting today, parenting do-over. If I had a parenting do-over, 7 vital changes I'd make, the title of a new book from Jonathan McKee. Jonathan's founder of thesourceforparents.com. He's author of over 20 books, including 52 Ways to Connect with Your Smartphone-Obsessed Kid and The Guy's Guide to God, Girls in the Phone in Your Pocket. And he speaks to and trains parents and leaders worldwide, as well as providing some great resources on the website. Check it out. It's the source for the number 4 parents.com. So we've been talking about the do-overs, some of those things that we want to do better. Jonathan, just before the break, talking a little bit about, you know, noticing, becoming a student of your child. And you talk about the power of a good question. Maybe say a little bit more about that.
Yeah, you know, one of the best ways to get to know our kids better is to, you know, do less monologues where we're talking and making them listening, and do more dialogue where there's conversation. And best way to do that is to just instead of talking so much, to ask questions. You know, and so I have a chapter where I basically talk about adding a question mark, and it's again, back to probably so many of the issues that parents are facing today. So many of them have to do with technology. So many of them have to do with one us where we want to, you know, maybe teach them a lesson about something or think through something that they aren't thinking through in the world of social media or the apps they're downloading or the people they're talking with or their decisions to spend too much time on their devices. And lots of times the temptation is to sit them down and lecture them about the good old days when we didn't have phones like that, you know, or whatever it is. And the thing I encourage and that I think so many parents are looking back and wish they did more was asking questions where we gave them an opportunity to answer and share their feelings and their thoughts. And because sometimes when we listen, we find out, oh, man, actually, I wasn't even aware they actually knew that much about that, or they had thought. Sometimes we thought wrong, and we lectured about something we didn't even need to lecture about. So asking questions is one of those ways where we can get to know where they're at. And also, it can help us really lead them to the decision, because as they're getting older and they're starting to make some of these decisions on their own, the one thing that we just cannot deny is someday, hopefully, you know, maybe age 18 when they go off to that college dorm or that, you know, military barracks or get their own apartment, whenever that is, whatever age that is, even if it's in their mid-20s or whatever, they're going to be making these decisions on their own. And the question parents have to ask themselves is am I preparing them for that day? And if we keep answering everything for them or making the decisions for them, then they're going to be learning how to do it on their own without us even there to guide them. So what an awesome opportunity we have right now to maybe lead them to decisions. And if our, you know, kid comes and says, hey, Dad, I want to go to Jake's on Friday nights. And, you know, can I go? Maybe instead of just immediately jumping to the telling them what they should do, just go, well, I don't know. Tell me about it. What do you think? You think, should you go? And just ask them. Just ask them a question, you know, in the same way if they think, I want to do this, or, I don't know, well, should you? You know, and there's so many places where we can throw a question, we can add a question mark. Same with if they, when it comes to entertainment, media, and technology, if they want to watch something. And you know, even the American Academy of Pediatrics says, co-view with your kids. That's the advice they give. They say, instead of coming up with some system to, you know, oh, if it's rated R, no, if it's PG-13, yes. We've all watched junky PG-13 movies and good R movies. I mean, I say that right now. I know I'm going to get a backlash, but just think about it. The Passion of the Christ was an R movie, okay? So let's think about some of this stuff. Instead of just saying yes or no based on a rating, what if you know, when your kid walks up to you and says, hey, I'm going to watch this on Netflix. Hey, let's watch it together, you know? Offer to watch it together. And maybe if you see something there, ask, hey, that was interesting what he just did right there. Was he right? You know, how do you think he'll feel about that decision next week, next month, next year? How do you think he got to this point? We can ask questions and lead them to the decision instead of making every decision for them.
And decision making is one of the challenges, isn't it? Because we are more like helicopter parents than we'd like to admit, isn't it? We want to protect our kids, and that's the right thing to do. But they do need to be able to. So, is there a strategy for letting the reins go a little bit so they get more opportunity to make decisions? What things shouldn't they be making? What decisions don't they need to make?
Well, you know, and I actually spent a whole chapter talking about that segue from high guidance to low guidance. When our kids are young, I mean, nobody would debate, you know, when you got a toddler sitting in the front yard with you and the toddler starts running towards the street, you know, no parent's going to say, let him go, he'll learn. You know, I mean, no, we make decisions for our toddlers. We say, no, bad, trucky, smash you. You know, we talk intelligently to them. But when they're age 18 and they legally in America could go off and join the Marines and be making decisions in an army barracks by themselves, they're in a college dorm. We know that when they're age 18 and out in the college dorm, they're not going to call us up on a Friday night and say, Mom, Dad, everybody in the dorm's watching Game of Thrones. Can I watch it? No, they're going to make that decision on their own. So the question is, how do we know at age 2 we're making decisions for them. We know at age 18 or whatever that is where they're on their own, they're making decisions for themselves. how do we get them to that point where they're equipped to make those decisions? And I call it a segue from, you know, a slow dissolve, a gradual decrease of guidance. And I kind of spell out exactly what that looks like. But, I mean, you know, when it comes to technology and many of these things, you know, if my 12-year-old comes up and asks me, hey, can I be on Snapchat? That's a time for a 12-year-old to be strict. And luckily, you know, you actually have to be 13 according to the COPA, the Child's Online Privacy Protection Act. You can say, sorry, the government says you have to be 13. You know, and again, a lot of parents don't even notice that because they you know aren't spending time investigating this stuff, and that's why I talk a lot about it in the book. But you know, if our kid comes up as a 12-year-old or 13-year-old, I might say, you know, oh no, sorry. But if my 16 and 17-year-old, you know, comes up and asks a question, I was at a parent workshop just a couple weeks ago. A parent came up to me and said, yeah, so my 17-year-old's been asking me if they could be on Instagram. And I've been saying no. And so I just asked the parents, I said, well, so why? Why'd you say no? Well, isn't it social media? And social media is bad, right? And so this parent really had no idea. And so as I talked with the parent, I just kind of said, well, Instagram's basically kind of like a photo album, you know, and it's like a digital photo album. But yes, it's good to talk with our kids and say, okay, who are you friending and allowing to jump on Instagram and see these photos? It would be good to know that, hey, only friends who I've met in person can look at these photos. And let's talk about what kind of photos should we post. And you can ask your kids questions like, what do you think are appropriate photos to post? What are inappropriate photos to post? And if we walk our kids through these things and get them used to thinking about these things and asking these questions, hopefully when they're age 18 or 20 or whatever on their own, they themselves, when they're deciding what app they want to download, are going to think through these things and go, what if I've gone through this decision-making process with my parents countless times. They asked me questions and I answered them. And you've encouraged them. You've got this. You've got this. And when they're on their own, they're like, okay, I got this. I can do this. I've done this countless times. And it takes a lot of conversations from with parent to kid.
As you talked about, you know, walking with, that is really ultimately the most important step, isn't it? That we have to get into get into our kids' shoes, if you will, and just walk with them in daily life.
Yeah, you know, and that's why my closing chapter is pretty much that's what it's about. It's about walking with. It's what that actually looks like. It's Deuteronomy chapter 6 for those who, you know, value what the Bible has to say. I mean, it's Deuteronomy chapter 6 in action. It's us passing on these values, what God has impressed on us and on our hearts, impressing that onto our children. Back then, thousands of years ago, God said, here's how to do that. As you're walking along the road, as you're getting up, as you're going to bed at night, you know, have these conversations with your kids. And what's that look like now? And, you know, in 2017, it looks like not just putting a bunch of rules on, you know, oh, I'm just going to put these monitors on our kids' phones and that'll be good. You know, I'll just put these rules and that's fine. And on the same hand, it's not let my kid do whatever he wants. No, it's when your kid walks up and says, can I have Instagram? You're saying, I don't know, let's check it out together. Let's Google it. Let's look. Let's make, you know, let's figure out. And you asking them questions. So that's kind of a lot of what it looks like is walking with them. And I spell out some specifics of what that looks like in the book.
Yeah, I know you do spend a good deal of your time as you teach and train and addressing issues of social media. And a lot of us as parents aren't as savvy as we should be. Just any words of advice there for us, just helping to try and navigate that with our kids?
Well, you know, and that's one reason. I mean, part of what we do in our ministry at thesourceforparents.com is we try to constantly provide articles and help for parents and update them. And we have a whole page called the Parenting Help page, and it has articles like titled, "Are smartphones too dangerous for my kids?" You know, or what guidelines should I have? And we spell out, you know, and we try to educate parents on what some of this stuff is. So if they've never heard of COPA, the Child Online Privacy Protection Act, they know what that is, and they can learn about what some of these apps are, because it is so hard to keep up. But the best advice I have for parents is, if you don't know, you know, investigate it with your kid. You know, you could literally, if your kid comes up and says, hey, can I have Snapchat, and you know nothing about it, you know, Google it. Snapchat safety concerns, Snapchat parenting, you know, control. I mean, just throw in some whatever you think that would be, and very often you'll end up at one of our websites or my blog because I talk about this stuff all the time. Or pick up a book like this one, If I Had a Parenting Do-Over, or my book, 52 Ways to Connect with Your Smartphone-Obsessed Kid. In these books, I talk about these issues all the time, so I try to educate parents so they're more familiar when their kid goes, hey, you know, when you look at your kid's playlist and you see Nicki Minaj and you're like, who is this Nicki Minaj? You might be a little equipped to be able to have that conversation and not freak out, but people say, what's she saying here? You know, well, is she right? You know, what's the Bible have to say about that?
Yeah. Jonathan, I know that, you know, a lot of us parents, we did mess up along the way, didn't do it right, and we can easily kind of beat ourselves up on that. And there's always, you know, opportunities to maybe make amends, but what's your encouragement to parents today who are maybe feeling like they're just not doing the right job that they should be?
Well, my first word of encouragement is you're not alone. We've all been there. I look back at so many decisions I made and think, oh, man, I wish I would have done that differently. But, you know, if you look at our God, our designer, he's the architect of new beginnings. And whenever somebody whose life was a complete wreck, you know, showed up before Jesus, his response was always, you know, I don't care where you've been. I care where you're going. And, man, you've got your future in front of you. And regardless if your kid's 8 or 18 or 28, you know, build in your kids. Make that connection with them. If they're 8, you're going to have a lot more boundaries than when they're 18, you know, and that's okay. But make sure that boundaries never get in the way with bonding. Make sure you have a relationship with your kid. Don't underestimate the power of conversations, because if you listen to your kid and listen to your kid, I tell you, I've been in youth ministry 25 years, and I talk with teenagers all the time who just have a feeling that my parents know nothing about me, and they don't care about me, and they never listen to me. The number one complaint we hear from teenagers across the board is, my parents don't listen. And what's funny and also scary is that me as an adult, as a youth worker, hanging out with a kid, I can sit there and just be a listener. And within 5 minutes, I honestly, just by listening, they're willing to share so much with me. And then they're willing to listen to me because I listen to them. And we as parents need to do that. We don't need somebody else to. And by the way, I'm not saying that it's great. As a matter of fact, most research out there out of Fuller Seminary is saying our kids should have 5 mentors, you know, 5. So it's great to have, you know, other people and youth pastors and stuff. But it's not just their job. It's our job as a parent. Primarily, we as parents have the biggest influence. So listen to your kids. Be there for them. Ask them questions. And as we have that relationship and dialogue with them, you know, it's not too late. Start today, if that's what it takes. Take your kid out for their favorite fries and get to know them and listen to them and build that relationship. And then if they're 12 years old and they're asking you to be on Snapchat, tell them, sorry, no, because that's okay.
Jonathan McKee giving us such wise words and encouragement today. Jonathan's author of the new book, If I Had a Parenting Do-Over, 7 Vital Changes I'd Make. Jonathan is founder of thesource4parents.com. Check it out, thesource4parents.com. And author of some 20 books, been in youth ministry and speaking for over 25 years. We're honored to have him with us today on Connecting Faith. We do have some copies of the book to give away as well. We'll do that at the top of the hour. So give us a call at 877-93-FAITH. Jonathan, great to visit with you. Thanks for your good words today.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. I enjoyed it.
You're listening to Connecting Faith.
Lord, I want to be just like you, because he wants to be just like me. I want to be a holy example for his innocent eyes to see. Help me be a hearing Bible law that my little boy can breathe. I want to be just like you.
Radio.
I always think about that verse of Philippians 1:6, right? So Paul says, I'm confident of this, that he who began a good work in you will see it to completion until the day of Christ Jesus. So even in our parenting, you know, God hasn't given up on us or our kids. And good words from Jonathan McKee today. If I had a parenting do-over, we do have some copies of that to give away. I always love on the program when we're talking about a topic to maybe take a look at it from a different angle and the lens. And pulled out a conversation I had, a portion of a conversation I had with Paul David Tripp not too long ago. Paul is a speaker and a writer. In fact, whatever he writes, I try and read, and I recommend him as well. Connecting to the transforming power of Christ to everyday life. And recently, he wrote a new book called Parenting, 14 Gospel Principles That Can Radically Change Your Family. And here's a little bit of Paul responding to the question, what is a parent's job?
Here's what I began to hear, that parents, Christian parents, good-meaning, well-intending Christian parents, thought that their job was to set up a neat system of rules that would manage and control the behavior of their children. And if they did that, their children would be okay. Now, do your children need rules? Yes. But what we have to understand about God's law is that it's great at revealing sin. It exposes what's in our hearts. It's a great guide for life. But the law has no ability whatsoever to change or transform your children. And so our children need something more than that, because if the law could change our children, Jesus would have never had to come. It wouldn't have been necessary. He had given his law. The fact that Jesus came meant if we're really going to be changed, we need something more than just a set of rules.
We like rules, though. You know, systems work for us. We feel comfortable with that. Grace seems messy, I suppose.
Yeah, it does. And I think that one of the problems is, I think there's a pretty widespread misdefinition, misunderstanding of grace. I think often when parents hear, give your children grace, what they hear is be permissive. Don't emphasize authority. Grace is not about being permissive. Grace is not about calling wrong right. If wrong were right, there would be no need for grace. Grace always sees wrong as right, wrong as wrong. But what grace does, rather than just angry words and punishment, grace asks the question, what is God seeking to do in this person's life? How is God seeking to change this person, and how can I be part of it? So I move toward the person as God's tool rather than just saying, I'm going to enforce the punishment, I'm going to say condemning words and walk away.
You address issues of authority. That's tied in with character. Just thinking about that verse in Proverbs, you know, foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child. I mean, that, you know, we all need to understand the reality of sin in our lives, don't we? I mean, we all have a problem with authority.
Yeah, you know, a child doesn't come into the world esteeming authority. In fact, probably the best way to talk about the children that we parent is, like us, they're little self-appointed, self-sovereign sinners. And so they're going to push against authority. Let me give you an example. Those arguments, fights over what to eat or when to go to bed, they're not about the topic. My child hasn't read a diet book and has come to a commitment that they want to eat the paleo diet. Or my child hasn't taken a sleep study and they're debating how much sleep they need. When they argue about those things, they're arguing because they're saying to you, you will not rule me. I'm going to be the only ruler that I need. So those battles over authority are very, very important. And it's very important to have those battles early when it's little things. I have parents say all the time, well, it's just little issues. Why fight over little issues? Praise God that they're little issues. Praise God that in those moments you have a chance to teach your children that authority is not a bad thing. It's a beautiful thing. It's a patient thing. It's a protective thing. It's a wisdom-giving thing. so that they come to esteem authority. You don't want to fight your authority battles with a 17-year-old.
Probably most of us think in terms of Ephesians 6 as a key passage on parenting. Say a bit more about that passage, and I know that you also suggest that there's maybe a better parenting passage in the Bible. So talk about Ephesians 6 and then going beyond that.
I think Ephesians 6 is a wonderful passage. It really defines how important obedience is and how important honor is. But one of the things I love about Ephesians 6 is that moment where it says, parents or fathers, don't provoke your children to anger. That means that as I exercise authority, I have no independent authority. My authority is representative authority because I'm an ambassador. That means that every time I exercise authority, it must be a beautiful picture of the authority of God. Because I want to be used of God to take children who naturally resist authority and show them that authority is not a crushing thing. Authority is a beautiful thing. And so the way that I exercise authority is very important. But I think there's another passage that has huge application to parenting that we miss, and that's what we call the Great Commission. When Jesus commissioned his disciples and said, all power is given to me in heaven and on earth, go therefore and make disciples of all nations, teaching them to observe everything I've commanded you, and lo, I am with you always. What a beautiful passage. God says, I've got all the authority and the power that you could ever want for this task, so you go. And what's the task of parenting? Not producing athletes or musicians or college graduates first. The first primary goal is to make disciples of my children, because it's only when they willingly surrender their hearts to God, not just in a salvation way, but in every area of their life, that they will live the way they're supposed to live. How do I do that? I look for every teaching opportunity that God will give me. And as I do that, I know he didn't just send me, he's going with me. And in every moment, I'm not just reliant on my power, but on his power. Neil, I want to say it this way. God doesn't give parents children because they're able. He gives parents children because he's able.
A good word from Paul David Tripp from his book, Parenting, 14 Gospel Principles That Can Radically Change Your Family. And as you heard, God gives us children because he is able.
Prayer can change everything. Hi, I'm Steve Douglas for Making Your Life Count. And Steve Shoup gives us a great prayer example from Jesus' own life.
We can look at Jesus' life. Even the Son of God is putting himself in this place where he's getting away from people. He's going into the garden. He's getting in a boat, or he's getting away where he can just have this conversation with his Father.
God is always available to provide you help that you need when you seek him in prayer.
If we don't feel we're capable of doing what we're asked to do, he will allow us in open conversation. He will lead and direct our steps, and that comes through conversation with him.
It's true, isn't it? You can find direction in life when you have a meaningful relationship with God through prayer. Do you want to learn more about that? Go to MakingYourLifeCount.com.
Hope you benefited from today's conversation on parenting, Jonathan McKee's conversation, as well as the full conversation with Paul David Tripp. They'll both be available online. You go to the Connecting Faith show page at myfaithradio.com, and you can find that great material. Enjoy it. Listen to it again. Share it with a friend. Useful information that helps us connect faith to life every day. Ted, I took a bunch of notes.
Me too.
Yeah, got a chance with my grandkids, I think, to spoil them.
Turn things around.
Sure,
yeah, there you
that's
go.
Right. We'll do that. Maybe you're struggling with the question, am I enough? Many women do. The pressure to have it all together is far too common. Comparison trap is almost a daily occurrence. Tomorrow on Connecting Faith, Michelle Cushat will share with Joe Bender about I Am, a 60-day journey to knowing who you are because who he is. Check it out tomorrow. Thanks for listening to this Connecting Faith podcast. These conversations are available because of listener support, and you can make a gift right now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of Connecting Faith, you can subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and growing the awareness and impact of Connecting Faith.